Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 5:10, 66 degrees on this Wednesday, April 30th, 2025. It's Hump Day! Yes, we got past the week. Half of it anyway. We're over the hump. It's all downhill from here. We can make it to Friday. It ain't a thing. We got it covered. Still the big wing debate going today. The flats are still beating the drums. So what's your preference in wings? Do you like the flats? Do you like the drums? My wife will only eat the drumsticks. She doesn't like the flats. She'll pick the, even if we get different sauces, she usually gets like the, the Asian teriyaki or the type sauce. And I'll get the hot buffalo, normal hot wings, buffalo sauce. And, you know, she'll even go for my drumsticks that are left and start sneaking hers over. It's quite funny. But I'm actually pretty surprised. Now, I like both. I just like wings. They are one of my favorite staple food groups. So, you know, check them out either way. I like bone-in better than boneless. But a good, real chicken breast boneless wing done right is good, too. I like both the flats and the drumsticks, but it appears that the majority of you out there like the flats. So it's an interesting survey. You could still take it on my Facebook page. Go to Rob O'Donnell and you can get your vote in there, but the flats are winning. There are a handful of us that like both. And listen, we just like to eat, right? It's all about the flavor. You get the same one way or another. So, costly cyber charter tuition is consuming tens of millions of new state dollars for some PA districts. And this is coming out of Harrisburg. A surge of taxpayer money approved last year to help students in Pennsylvania's poorest school districts is being used by dozens of districts to pay growing charter school bills that officials say are imperiling their budgets. Well, here's the thing now. You're talking about the poorest school districts. If they're not performing and you're a parent in those school districts, wouldn't you like the opportunity? Wouldn't you, if you had the wherewithal to do it? I know not a cyber school is not for everybody. Charter schools are not for everybody. But wouldn't you look to get your child a better education with those dollars? And those extra tax dollars are not only for the school district. Matter of fact, they're not for the school district at all. They're for the students. And that's the way it should be. And if you're afraid of cyber schools, cyber charter schools, taking the students away from your in-person brick-and-mortar school districts that we know so well here throughout Pennsylvania or throughout the nation, to be honest with you, do a better job. Come up with a better plan. Create better stakeholders involving parents, teachers. Bring back PTAs that actually do something like they did from our childhoods, where they were actually involved, where a teacher and parents sat down and came up with a plan rather than, hey, you do your thing at home, I'll do my thing in the classroom, and we'll stay in each other's lanes. Because you hear that a lot the past few decades, you know, stay in your lane. The students are the focus. The students should always be the focus. And that goes for the money as well. And I understand the arguments. I understand, well, if you start picking away at the finances of school districts, you know, how can they possibly do their job? Well, do a better job and you wouldn't have to worry about that. And I'm not saying that they're not doing a good job. I'm not saying there's not teachers out there who go above and beyond. There surely are. But there is a problem. There's a documented problem that we need to address. The documented problem is we're graduating kids that can't read or write on an eighth grade level. We are graduating from high school across this nation, nowhere specifically, but across the nation, functionally illiterate children, young adults who are expected to go to college and take on debt without a plan. More and more so. And this is a holistic problem. Again, parents, you need to be involved in every aspect of your child's life until the age of 18, until they graduate high school. That's always been the bar. And even after that, you know, college is not easy to navigate. You know, they need mentorship. They need guidance. They need support. They need discipline sometimes through that college era. And that falls on us as parents. But, you know, district after district, administrators told the state that this spending was particularly driven by a rapid growth in expenses related to cyber charter schools, an online-only education option that has gained popularity since the pandemic. You know, of course, it gave parents an opportunity. It was forced upon them. Schools were shut down. They weren't doing the things they should have been doing. And please, I was there. My kids were in high school in their final years during COVID. My daughter was taking honors calculus and she was getting origami for assignments. Please. If it wasn't for the extra stuff that was being done that we were giving our child and the research that we did to find online platforms that could give lessons to prepare them for college, because you could totally give up on your senior or junior year of high school and pass fine, especially during COVID. That was the norm. But when you got to college and they expected you to know these things, you were the one that was behind, paying for remedial classes again, not passing your classes with a grade standard for your major. So you were the one that it was detrimental to as the student. So we made it a point to find online resources, to find resources where they could get the lessons that they should have been doing. And they did them because we were on top of it. Because we're involved. And parents need to be involved in their kids' education. And yes, there's only a finite amount of funding for our school children. But it should be about the children, not the districts, not the school. We can find the standardized test scores that have been abysmal and are just declining. We see the standard effect of what COVID did to education across the nation, across the world even. We've seen throwing more and more money at our school districts have had no corresponding results to show for it. We've also shown that even though student population has decreased, teacher population has only increased slightly, which is a good thing because you need less students in a classroom to get better one-on-one treatment from time to time. But we've seen administrators and management in school districts skyrocket to an undefendable amount. And these are the metrics that are out there that are undeniable. But yet the answer is always, let's throw more money at it. Oh, you're taking money away from the brick-and-mortar school districts because of cyber or charter schools or private vouchers or whatever else there is. Well, the system, the way it is, the status quo, is failing. So yes, parents deserve options. And if those options are outperforming you and you're on the losing end of that, do a better job. Come up with a better plan to sustain your business. Working in a school district is your business, from the superintendent to the assistant superintendent to the head of special education to the director of curriculum to the math director to the assistant principal of this to the principal to the department head to the teachers. Come up with a plan to make your business, that school district, the most attracted entity you can possibly do. Or suffer the consequences. Less funding. Less funding eventually means the layoff of teachers. The layoff of teachers eventually means that people aren't going to have jobs. We're going to have to do with less. There'll be less programs. There'll be less need for those supervisors, managers, and assistant principals, and directors, and department heads, and head of psychology, and head of this. All the metrics are working against you right now. You have no support for simply saying throw more money at it. If we only had more funding. Because it's been proven that it doesn't matter how much money you throw at the problem. That's not the problem. It masks the problem for a while. And then to complain about we can't compete with cyber school. Why can't you compete with cyber school? Now, I agree. Cyber schools need to have a threshold. You can't charge a ridiculous amount for cyber school. But it doesn't mean the child should have less money dedicated towards that child because they choose cyber school or a charter school or a private voucher program. It's about the child's education. It's about the child. It's not about the system. It's never about the system. It should never be about the system. You want to build a better system? Get together and form the most attractive system you can. And believe me, if you do that, parents will move to that district to send kids to that school district. They do it all the time. Parents relocate for the better sports programs in school districts. They relocate for the highest rated school districts as far as academics go. The ones with the best probability that their kids go to Ivy schools. It happens all over the country. Everyone knows, well, this is the better school district. This is one of the best rated school districts. There's metrics all over the internet. If you create one, they will come. It's a proven fact. But as far as education goes, it's tax dollars. It's monopoly money. No one's really, we just raise the millage. We'll just get some more money from the state or the feds. We'll petition the feds for more money. We don't have to do anything different. We don't have to be better. We don't have to create a better product. No. Yes. Yes, that's how you succeed. That's how good private schools succeed. That's how good universities and colleges succeed. But when you lay back and say, we're the only game in town. Relax. Our graduation rate's good. Is it? Look at the test scores. Look at what's happening post-high school, where people are just simply going to the 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th grade instead of a college future for their work future. Because that's all college is, right? Preparation for your work life. Preparation to prepare you for the rest of your life. So enough complaining about what costs and what competition is out there. Create a better product and there'll be plenty of work for you to do. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 526, 65 degrees. So it appears, and if you saw the cabinet meeting today, which was a monster of a cabinet meeting, 2 hours long, Elon Musk was sitting there and he was wearing two baseball hats. He says, listen, I wear many hats. So was kind of making a joke of it. But Elon Musk is no longer working from the White House, reports are stating. Musk, the world's richest man, is preparing to transition out of his official role with the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, as it's known, which is based on a short walk from the Oval Office. But his departure from the in-person work has not previously been reported. Instead of a meeting with him in person, I'm talking to him on the phone, but it's the same net effect, White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles told reporters during an extensive interview to mark Trump's 100th day in office. Musk, who defined much of Trump's initial weeks before the back in power, hasn't been here physically, but it really doesn't matter much, she added, because I get him on the phone whenever we need to discuss something. It was interesting because during today's cabinet meeting, there was an issue with the Secretary of Treasury. He said there's been an upgrade in the IT system at the Department of Treasury that started in 1995, and it hasn't been completed yet. And he goes, he has a young man from DOGE working on that system, and it will be upgraded in the next 2 years. The system that's been in the process of being upgraded since 1995, since before this young man was born, the Secretary of Treasury said, will be updated within the next 2 years, before the end of Trump's term. Just shows a little bit of what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, you can have your issues with whatever cuts are out there and downsizing and the moves they're making and what they're finding and what they're not finding. But when you cut through the nonsense and you don't create a job for yourself that you don't want to go away, it's amazing what could be done. Now, obviously, it's not a small project if it's still going to take, over 2 years to complete. But the mere fact that it's been started in 1995 and they haven't been able to upgrade it or complete the upgrade, and now it'll be done in the next 2 years, says a lot. And that was just part of the meeting today, if you watched it. But Susie Wiles also stressed that his folks, meaning Elon Musk and Doge, aren't going anywhere as they continue to work in the Eisenhower Executive Office building next door to the West Wing. It's unclear how often Musk plans to return to the White House campus before his stint as an unpaid special government employee concludes at the end of May. He will then advise Doge effort informally, simply being an advisor. For months, Musk would brief Trump personally in the Oval Office, attend cabinet meetings, and frequently travel with the president on Air Force One, often with his young son, X, joining him as he touts plans to slash the annual deficit by $1 trillion, halving the figure. The precise amount of money that Doge has cut is unclear. He's not out of it altogether. He's just not physically present as much as he was, Susie Wiles said, the chief of staff for the White House. And she did get a round of applause from the cabinet today. It was basically, and listen, anyone who knows how that works, and I know people who were in that process there. I mean, I've never been there personally and physically myself, but she is running that ship. Susie Wiles is no doubt the master and commander of the Oval Office in the White House. And I think everyone knows that that's there. So, I encourage you to take a look. It was.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
2-hour-long cabinet meeting. A lot of it was just, basic, hey, we're doing great type things. But they did go around the table to everyone. It was interesting that Vice President J.D. Vance said, looked around, says, I don't think I'm offending anybody by saying I'm the youngest here at the table. And it just goes to show you the spectrum that's there at that cabinet. And to have a cabinet meeting live on TV as it happens is unprecedented. I don't know. You've seen portions of some, but I've never seen it in its entirety. And it was run in its entirety today. So, check it out if you get a chance. But it appears that Elon Musk is, in fact, backing away. He was at the meeting today. He did speak a little bit during the meeting while it was his term. But we'll see where it goes. We'll see what the result actually is when all's said and done. I know the Department of Education, the Secretary of Education, said that her department's been cut by 50%. So it's 5:32 here at WILK. Time for the news with Paul Michaels.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So was looking through some stories today, and it said, this is the most useless phrase to put in email, experts say. So they say it accomplishes nothing. And I think we've all used it at one time or another, some more than others. But the experts say that you should avoid this phrase at all costs. Just checking in. Just checking in is considered one of the worst phrases to put in email. Experts state, and they're begging you to stop. Report, according to Modern Day Etiquette, boundaries and relationship expert Jenny Drezin, you might as well be shouting into the void if you're using this wording. This is vague non-statement that is basically the same as saying, push this to the top of your inbox. The COO and co-founder of Fresh Starts Registry told reporters. Also explain that it's not doing what you think it is. Just checking in does not accomplish the task it seemingly needs to, which is to force the issue or expedite the to-do to them. When you're using email communication, we want to be as straightforward and direct as possible. This phrase accomplishes nothing while also coming off vaguely passive-aggressive.
That doesn't mean every email has to be robotic or ruthless. They argued that you want results. You have to be clear. They suggest swapping the fluffy just checking in for something like wanted to know how progress was going on X, Y, and Z. Writing emails to ensure people respond to your questions and or get things done is an art, they explained. Speaking of wanting to get the point across in an email, some employees are shying away from being overly polite in their responses and are instead telling it how it is. As reported in the Wall Street Journal, 62-year-old chairman and chief investment officer with Ritholtz Wealth Management has no problem being blunt in his automated replies. I'm out of the office having way more fun than communicating with you, his reply says, according to the journal. Jake, I'm going to make these my standard replies on emails here at Odyssey.
I can't wait.
Yep. It's coming from, the Wall Street Journal, head of very successful wealth management. I'm out of the office having way more fun than communicating with you, his reply says, according to the journal. I will likely forget to email you back. I love it. Yes, standard operating procedure from now on. During this time, I will be out of the office, not checking email, avoiding texts, ignoring Slack, letting calls go to voicemail, off the grid, and generally unreachable. As such, my autoresponder is, well, auto-responding. The rest of this email reads. I love it. I'm setting that up today. While some employees are taking a straightforward approach to their work communication, some workers are choosing to sound more masculine. And that goes for female workers as well, to get what they want, despite experts warning against it. So don't do that. In 2025, we write emails like men and get promoted, says one content creator on social media, garnishing 59,000 views. The experts say don't follow that advice. While as an empowering statement for many women, perpetuating gender stereotypes in the workplace can be harmful, says CEO of professional training company Better Certify in a report in Work Life. It's better to communicate directly and briefly and focus on the information exchange. Nothing more, nothing less.
It's your email and you can do whatever the hell you want.
Right? It's my email. I can do whatever the hell I want. To an extent. Well, take advice, don't take advice. I kind of like those automated responses, so we're gonna write some of them into the system once I can figure out how that goes. It's 5:41 here at WILK, time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Here's the Storm Tracker 16 forecast. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 43. Thursday, partly cloudy, a chance of late-day showers, high of 75. Friday, cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, high 75. It's currently 66 degrees here at 5:41 at your official weather station, WILK. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. You know, this is the first song I learned on drums, Jake?
That's pretty awesome.
Yep. Tell you what, I give Rush all the credit in making me the... Give me the ability to play drums that I did. Learning to keep up with Neil Peart at a young age kind of set the bar really high. And it showed. You know, I did a little something-something. I ended up playing with the Baja Men in the Bahamas before they were the Baja Men. They were the Bohemians. Well, first they were High Voltage. Then they were the Bohemians. And then they became the Baja Men. And if you don't know who the Baja Men are, they're the band that played Who Let the Dogs Out. Yes, I was playing with them in the Bahamas for a few months and decided that living in paradise, you really can only do that for so long before you have to come back to reality. And I did. And their drummer, what happened is their original drummer broke their arm while I was down there. And they asked me to stay down there. And you know, they were playing at the local clubs every night. And again, at the time, they were High Voltage and then they were the Bohemians. And then they turned their name to the Baja Men later on. And with that hit single. Also played some drums for Debbie Gibson back in the day. Did some studio work between her first tour and her second tour. And again, was quite the experience. So Rush is no doubt my favorite band. even to this day. There you go. I just saw that the United States Naval Academy posted a video about my daughter. Today was the seniors, or the firsties, they call them. They're not seniors. They're called firsties. Today was their capstone day, where they need to do their graduation project, because everyone in the Naval Academy is in a STEM program. So today was their capstone day, and my daughter's was on the barnacles and shellfish of the Severn River, because she's an oceanography and meteorology major. So she had her capstone project. I just posted a copy of it on Facebook, so you could check it out there, her giving, you know, part of her presentation. But the United States Naval Academy Instagram page just featured her on that. And my other daughter, my middle daughter, the nurse, she's leaving Pennsylvania. The movers were at her place today in western Pennsylvania, out in DuBois, where she worked at the DuBois Medical Center, and packed her all up. She'll be taking a short stint at home for a little bit, and then she's headed to part south. She's going to Virginia Beach. She took a job with the big children's hospital down there, which, if you ever been to Norfolk and seen the children's hospital, it's the equivalent to our CHOP. It's a huge campus. There's like 12 different buildings. They have their own heliport. It's right near the Norfolk Navy base. It's just a huge facility and one of the top children's hospitals and trauma center for that area, the Mid-Atlantic there in Virginia. So she took a position down there. And I'll tell you, they do things right. And it's a shame because, you know, Pennsylvania, Harrisburg was a nightmare getting her paperwork as far as her licensing and her, you know, the paperwork she needed just to work here in Pennsylvania. She took the job in Virginia Beach. They paid for movers to come to her house, pack her up and move her. You know, relocation money to help get her down there, bonuses and the whole thing. Plus, she lives five blocks from the beach now. Which is going to create a quality of life. She's a pediatric psychiatric nurse. She's going to work in their trauma center. So it's going to be it's work that I am extremely proud of. I know I talk about my children in the military quite often, but to pick that line of work, pediatric psychiatric nursing, and deal with the trauma patients that come in, pediatric patients, young kids who attempted to harm themselves, or you know, maybe overdosed on something, or you know, it's trying work, and I'll give her all the credit in the world. And here's someone from kindergarten, you know, type 1 diabetic who fought through high school, you know, had her 504 plans, had her IEPs, got off an IEP back to a 504 plan. And, you know, we got extra tutors because she was losing a lot of schooling because of testing, you know, having to go to the nurse's office. She was losing an hour and 45 minutes a day of schooling, simply by going back and forth to the nursing office, having to wait to treat before and after, you know, lunches and before she came home on the school bus, after she got into school on the school bus. Really give her all the credit in the world for, you know, getting through her nursing program, getting her degree, graduating at the top of her class, and now living her best life. You know, going to live near the beach. She'll be near her brother, be a full-time aunt on the off time, which is good, be closer to family. I mean, she's 4 hours from us in DuBois, but you know, she'll be 2 miles from my son and his wife and my grandson, her nephew. I think it'll be good. Plus, five blocks from the beach, walk to the beach. So after she does a 12-hour shift, she can get her dog, Kobe, the sable doodle, who loves the beach, and she'll take him to the beach, go for walks. But they really did a tremendous job. The state of Virginia had her licensing. You know, she filled out the paperwork. They really went above and beyond to get nurses there. And we talk about the struggle to get nurses to Pennsylvania. We talk about, you know, the need for nurses here in Pennsylvania. But they make every step of the process difficult. You know what the problem was for her going to Virginia? Virginia had all their paperwork within days. The problem was Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, sending them the needed paperwork. Now, I don't know if that was a purposeful delay to not lose a nurse, but it was already a done deal. You already lost them. But just the extra, you know, the hospital was like, hey, you know, we'll send a moving truck for you to get all your stuff and move you. Just tell us where we're picking it up and where we're bringing it. You know, here's moving relocation bonus so you can cover some of your expenses, including your first month rent. So, extremely proud, and hopefully, as a 23-year-old young lady living 5 blocks from the beach, near her big brother, and having her sister-in-law right there, I'm looking forward to it. Plus, I love Virginia Beach, so maybe we'll have to do the show from down there a couple times. Good stuff there. Good stuff there. Somebody said the U.S. and Ukraine just signed a mineral deal. I did not see that yet if it just came over. It's a good thing. It's a very good thing because part of the process of that, and what a lot of people don't understand is part of the process of that is U.S. corporations, U.S. citizens will be there on the ground, assisting with that, will be there. And if Russia decides they're going to continue to bomb Ukraine and accidentally hits American citizens, well, now there's a problem. Now there's a bigger problem. That was one, instead of putting troops on the ground, instead of putting, a security force there that includes Americans, which Americans don't want, no one wants. They are going to put American corporations there with American citizens and American workers. We've done it in the oil fields in the Middle East. We've done it all over. And it's worked. So if that is true, and I have no reason to believe it's true, I'm just looking at text messages coming in. I apologize. It'll be a move in the right direction, without a doubt. So hopefully that is the case. Again, I don't see anything coming up right now. But if it's breaking news, I'm sure, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. So the illegal migrant who snatched Kristi Noem's purse, there's video of this out now, and the video is out there, and you could see it, and I reviewed it. And I said from the start, anyone who comes within arm's distance of any secretary of our nation's departments is a fail on security measures. It should not happen. I'm certified in dignitary protection from the NYPD. I've worked plenty of presidential details. I've worked high-value target details. It's a failure. And hopefully, internally, because we're not going to know about this, because A, they should never talk about security protocols when it comes to principals, and the Secretary of Homeland Security is without a doubt a principal. This person walked right behind the Secretary of Homeland Security and was able to kick her purse and then was able to guide it with his foot a little bit and then pick it up. The mere fact he could have reached out his arm and touched her, and the mere fact we know now that this is an illegal immigrant who's a career pickpocket theft thief with a criminal record, shows even more how bad this actually is. He's been arrested numerous times. He was actually arrested in New York for doing the same thing, not long prior to this event. But the mere fact anyone got even could approach the Secretary of Homeland Security with her family or not is a failure that I hope is being looked at the highest levels, and there needs to be changes made. Whoever is in charge of that detail, whoever was there that day, whoever was the lead agent in charge that day needs to be relieved. There is no need for that, and that's how you send a message in these organizations. Listen, the Secret Service, I've worked with them. I know plenty of them. They're great men and women. They're also not infallible. They also need to be kept on their toes. And under different administrations, there's been different criterias, protocols, and priorities for them. And, if you look at some of the security around some of our individuals, I mean, Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, was getting on an airplane just the other day. And if you look at his body person, the person most responsible for his closest security, what was a huge presence, either special forces or naval special warfare, that is tasked with eliminating any possible threat that comes near him. And believe me, there are threats out there for our Secretary of Homeland Security, our Secretary of Defense, our Secretary of Treasury. There are plenty of people out there domestically and internationally that see them as a threat and would like to harm them if they had the ability to. everything is a test. Everything is being looked at by other organizations. What's going on now in the Red Sea with the Houthis firing at our ships? China and Russia is watching that with a microscope to see where the weaknesses are, how we react to certain things. And they'll even coordinate with them and say, hey, can you try this type of attack? We want to see what the response is from the Americans. Everything is being looked at. They're dissecting every response we have in order to defeat us if they ever in that opportunity, if they're ever in that position. So this will be looked at. Hey, somebody got this close and this is how they did it. Can we mimic that? Can we do that again? Let's try a dry run with an innocent person to see if they could do it if it's stopped. It happens all the time, and it's pretty scary that this got that close. It's 5:57 here at WILK. We'll be back to close out the show in just a minute. That's it for the Rob O'Donnell Show. We'll be back tomorrow. And yes, there is a deal with Ukraine on mineral rights. We'll be posting it on my social media, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow. See you then.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.